So I'll call this meeting to order at 8:50, and let's go ahead and do roll call while... Nicole, do you want us to try and speak into the mics while we do this? To continue trying to adjust? Oh, okay, so while we're doing roll call, let's try to speak into the mics a little bit, not too close, and see if that'll help Nicole adjust. Adam Kane? Kirsten Bay?
Here.
Sarah Batiste? Deb Jepson?
Here.
Mary Alice Short, who should be joining us at 9. Debbie Gonzalez? Leslie Walls?
Here.
Jamie Warwick?
Here.
Debbie Coxon?
Here.
Jesse Atencio? Aaron Albertson?
Here.
This is Shelley from UAF eLearning.
Okay, thank you. Welcome.
Thanks.
Greg Simpson? Kim Eames? Debbie Blevins? Juan Gula?
Here.
Robin Winant?
Here, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just great. Yeah, online is okay. It's us in the room.
Perfect. Thanks, Brad.
Chris Winters?
Here.
Jeanette Altman?
Here.
Jennifer Youngberg?
Here.
Travis Brinzo?
Here.
Richard Machida?
Yeah. Proxy for Richard Machida.
I'm sorry, one more time?
Proxy. I'm proxy for Richard Machida.
Okay.
David Vance.
I'm sorry?
David Vance.
David Vance. Okay. Jarkko Toivonen?
Here.
Kristen Becks?
Here.
Evelyn Pensgaard?
Here.
Selena Brown?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We hear you very well. Can you tone down the volume on that, on your phone or on the
screen? All right. I'm just really loud. Thank you.
Tom Langdon? Cynthia Collins? Tony Abbey? Brad Crick, I am here. Ashley Monroe?
Here.
Joella Sparks? All right, is there anyone whose name I did not call or who's joined us since we started doing roll call? All right, quorum is met. And again, I don't know if we'll probably have continued mic trouble all throughout today. If someone isn't speaking up, please feel free to say something. And let's go ahead and move on. Approval of the agenda. Good morning. Who just joined us?
Oh, this was Phil Harrington up at IAB.
Oh, okay. Welcome. Are we, do I sound any better? I think there's less crackle in the room. I'd be close to it. But all right, let's go ahead and move on to approval of the agenda for today's meeting. Do anyone have any changes to the agenda or additions?
I would like to add a summary of the staff healthcare committee meeting from yesterday.
Okay. Would that be already covered under the external committees? We have SHCC listed. It's not listed. Okay. I am sorry about that.
I think it is, but it's...
Oh, there it is. So.
It's got the notes from the previous one. We did have a meeting yesterday, and I wanted to go over what happened yesterday.
Okay. I think that part of the agenda is a good place for it, where it should go. I would accept a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? Hearing none, any opposition to approving the agenda? All right, we have an agenda. So to approval of minutes for meeting number 241.
Move to approve.
All right, we have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
A second.
All right. Any discussion? Any opposition to approving the minutes as presented? All right. Hearing none, we have the minutes for meeting 241. So on to status of pending actions. And so far as I know, thank you. We don't have any right now. So we're still a little early, but let's go ahead and move to public comment. We have some people in the room. Is there anyone here for public comment? No? Okay. Well, welcome. So we'll go ahead and move on to officer reports.
Before we do that, could I just say hi, this is Adam Kane. I've joined the meeting a little late. Sorry.
Oh, welcome, Adam. Okay, so I wanted to start out by thanking all of our alternates who have become at-large seats or at-large representatives. Thank you all for stepping up and in. And we are now a larger body than we were before. And with that, a little bit of bookkeeping. Since we have now a new process for proxies, so if you're not able to make a meeting, please identify a proxy and let Nicole know at least 24 hours before your meeting or before this meeting. That way, she can verify if you're a unit rep, it needs to be someone from your unit who is also repped by staff counsel. If you're at large, it could be anyone within UAF as long as they're a staff person repped by staff counsel. And you can also give Nicole some names in advance, and she can clear them. And then when they come, they're already set to go. But that'll just make it a lot easier. Staff counsel recently, I should say staff affairs, put out a survey. We'll hear more from staff affairs later today. But there was a really tremendous response. I wanted to thank Mary Alice and the staff affairs committee and Nicole for all of their work on that survey. During pre-staff, Mary Alice and I heard from the Chancellor that the Diversity Task Force report should be coming out soon. There should be a memo going forward with recommendations for the university and changes that we might make. Two items that I wanted to bring up from Faculty Senate, and I apologize, David, if I'm stepping on your toes, but they were two items that were tabled at Faculty Senate, but I thought they would be of interest to us. One was a resolution concerning GeoDiff, support for the state's GeoDiff and applying those to UAF employees. So it was a tabled item, but I thought it was something we'd want to know, rural affairs may want to be aware of. And then another item that I thought was interesting that I was just leave there, but there was a tabled item regarding smoke-free campus. Another thing I think was of interest to staff council. At Staff Alliance, we've consolidated the compensation groups. There was last year a compensation working group, and we were going to keep that going to address the compensation proposals that were put forward to the President's office and to UAHR. And then we had a plan to make a second compensation group to go forward. We decided at Staff Alliance that was way too confusing, and so now there's just one compensation group that will do both the work of talking about the previous proposals to UAHR and moving forward with new proposals regarding compensation. Should consist of two people from each MAU, and I'll be looking for people from UAF to represent UAF at that committee. So if you're interested, please let me know. And my last update then concerns our elections, and I wanted to let this body know that Ashley and I are aware of aware of our elections timeline. We'll be working with Richard to make sure that that happens. We've got the data we needed from Ian's OIP. But we have the data we need to run the elections, and so hopefully will be happening very soon. But I just want to let you all know that that has not fallen off the radar. And with that, I will turn the mic over to Ashley.
Let's see. We'll start with the wellness program. As many of you know, we've been through the wellness program. There was a bid put out. Healthy Roads was awarded the bid. Win for Alaska put in a formal protest. That formal protest has gone one step further and now is in the state of Alaska court system with a my mind is going blank on the exact word, but basically right now it's still pending in the court system. So Healthy Roads cannot continue on with the startup program until a final decision is made by the state of Alaska. And at this point, Healthy Roads was supposed to start on October 1st with implementation. The implementation was going to take 90 days, so that means that Healthy Roads is going to be our new wellness provider and really actually working on the system as of January 1st. Because of this timeline, that has been postponed. The goal is to still start implementation very soon, as soon as a decision is made, and hopefully have a start date for having a program as of February 1st. That's still their goal date, even though a decision has not yet been made. But my guess is if we wait much longer, that date is going to have to be pushed back again. So something to keep in mind. Brad and I met with Green Dot, and they are going to be starting up a UAF program. So we'll be hearing from them probably in the next couple months as they come in and as a guest speaker and talk about the Green Dot program, training that's available to UAF staff and faculty and how that might affect on campus or to find out if you're interested in participating with Green Dot.
What is Green Dot?
That's a good question. Green Dot is, I'm not sure how to describe it without the lengthy version, but Green Dot is basically a way to stop and stand up against violence, whether domestic violence, violence on campus, anything like that. Staff Alliance put forth a resolution on bullying, and I just wanted to take a minute and read that for you. We did put that forth to President Gamble, and he did accept it, acknowledge it, and is going to be working to provide that forth. So I'll just go ahead and read that bullying support. It says, whereas we, the Staff Alliance, resolve to support President Gamble's commitment to raise awareness about bullying issues throughout the University of Alaska. The bullying issue surfaced in 2012-2013 through a system-wide Staff Alliance work-life survey, which included comments by employees. And whereas UA Statewide launched a new bullying awareness training in the fall of 2013 to bring attention to and stem a prominent bullying issue, the training occurred with statewide employees only. Because the issue surfaced in a statewide system-wide survey of all employees, we request the awareness training take place throughout the UA system to include UAA, UAF, UAS, and extended campuses. And whereas we, the Staff Alliance, support the initiative that all new UA employees and new UA supervisors receive this training system-wide, we request language communicating the issue, including the word bullying. We understand the word does not appear in the University of Alaska Board of Regents policy or university regulations. While this behavior can take many different names and forms, the known collective umbrella term is bullying. For ease of communication, we support the use of this word when the university addresses the issue. The use of this word communicates a clear message to employees and to readers and informs them that a policy regarding bullying and applicable regulations specifically exists. Therefore, be it resolved that the Staff Alliance advises the University of Alaska administration to support bullying awareness training system-wide and for use of the word bullying to be used system-wide for this and other related purposes. So we will be talking with probably Chancellor Rogers at our next pre-staff to ask how he plans to implement bullying training at UAF since President Gamble has supported it and bullying training will now be pushed out, not just for statewide employees, but for all university employees. And then lastly, you probably noticed an email invite to all staff coming out to attend staff council. So it looks like we have a couple people back there that have taken us up on our invitation to attend. So we do ask that that you do communicate things back to your units to invite members to participate or to come to you with items that they wish you to bring to the table. So we'll be continuing that email reminder before each meeting. That's all I had for my report.
Are there any questions for Ashley and I? Hi, David.
What's the status of the wellness program then? Just there's nothing, or does Win for Alaska continue until that decision is made? Because they were doing something this, you know, fall, sort of.
If you can hang on, I can update part of that when I go through the staff healthcare committee meeting review.
Sure. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
I have one question kind of regarding...
I'm sorry, on the line. I apologize for cutting you off. We have one question here in the room first, and then I'll come back.
Thank you.
This is a question about the bullying training. Now, we have a safety training, for example, and everybody is supposed to go through a safety training because everybody needs to be safe, and we're still trying to figure out how to make that actually work well. And it sounds like we're sort of taking the same approach with bullying, but I'm just kind of wondering, is that the right approach? And I just wanted to ask that question because not everybody's a bully. And it sort of seems like there are some people who might need a lot of training and most people that don't need any.
That is a very good point. I will say that having not gone through the training, because I'm not a statewide employee, I cannot attest to how it was actually done, but we did have an opportunity to review some of the materials, and some of it is on identifying being bullied, identifying being a bully, and watching someone else be bullied. So some of it is not necessarily I'm a bully or I'm being bullied, but how can I see that you're being bullied? So, and I think you had a comment?
Yeah, I went through that training, and it was just mostly for awareness, basically. Says what to look for and what's going on, and it was just informational, nothing crazy. It was an hour, no, hour and a half with the questions, but it was just pretty self-explanatory. So.
My guess is we'll hear a lot more on that after Brad and I have a chance to meet. This is relatively new. I'm trying to look at the date. We sent it at the end of September. And so we've not heard back on how President Gamble has requested chancellors get involved, and we have not had a chance to ask Chancellor Rogers what his plans are for bullying training on campus. But it's also something that we could ask. Brad Loblin, Director of HR, will be here later today, and I'm sure that he's going to be involved in this issue, so we can ask him as well.
Other questions or comments about the about David's bullying training question, or about the training, or the training generally? All right. Thank you. There was a question online. I apologize for cutting you off. Are you still there?
Yes. This is Robin. I had a question about Win. Were they the ones that usually sponsored getting flu shots in October? And has anybody heard if that's still going to be happening?
I see some head shaking. I don't even remember the flu shot
issue. They used to sponsor that, yes.
Okay.
Because I got my flu shot that way every year. So,
Did you say yes, that they were the ones?
Yes, they were the ones that sponsored that. And as far as I know, and this is Chris Becks, by the way, as far as I know, there's nothing like that that's happened on at least not on this campus at UAS.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything on the email or anything.
This is Shelley with UAF HR and Benefits. I have a little information on that if you would like me to share it.
Please go ahead.
I've been talking with Erica Van Flyn, and we are aware of the flu shot clinic that Wynn used to put on that obviously it won't be happening this year. So we are working in conjunction to try to get it to still offer it to our employees with the benefits through a different mechanism. We have to do it on our own. So we're working collectively together to try to get a flu shot clinic there for employees. We just have to work out the logistics of it. So, but we are hoping that we can offer that.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Emily.
You're welcome.
Other questions? Okay, and I'm pushed through 9 o'clock. I asked for public comment at 8:50-ish, 8:55, I think. But was there anyone who came in at 9 who wanted to speak for public comment? Okay, I've heard from Nicole that the chancellor should be with us at about 9:45. So. If it's all right with our governance groups, I'd like to go ahead and move on to our governance reports. And David Valentine from Faculty Senate.
So my toes are still hurting from you stepping on. No, I'm kidding. but you raised the exact two issues that I wanted to raise. I'll just elaborate them on them just slightly. The first is the tobacco issue. The reason why this came up is that I was participating a few weeks back in a Systems Governance Council teleconference, and the issue came up that a student group had brought a proposal apparently to the Board of Regents saying that tobacco products, the use of any tobacco products, would be banned on all University of Alaska System properties throughout the state. So that would include not just buildings and sidewalks, but also any lands owned by the University of Alaska, which struck me as being, despite the fact that I really dislike tobacco, I thought, you know, this is an awfully heavy-handed approach, and I voiced my objection. And what came back was, well, we don't really care that much about what you think. What we care about is what does the Faculty Senate think. And so I drafted a resolution opposing a system-wide ban on tobacco use, and brought that as a discussion item to the Administrative Council, who said, well, let's go ahead and offer it as a resolution to the next Faculty Senate meeting. So we did that. And it ran into a little bit of trouble at the Senate meeting because of needing to get some additional information and so forth. So it was tabled, but it'll come back up probably at the next Senate meeting, but I thought you might want to be aware of that. I understand that you all are working on it from a different angle where you're doing a survey, which I didn't bother to do. I just went ahead and drafted a motion resolution. But anyway, so there is that. And then the other one is the one that, Brad, you mentioned about the supporting the following the recommendations of the most recent McDowell report in order to have the geographic salary differentials put into place based on the most recent McDowell report. And so that came up sort of for the first time following the Union Representative Assembly meeting in Anchorage, which was the Saturday prior to the Monday Faculty Senate meeting. So that was the first time we heard of it, but that will probably come up again at the next Faculty Senate meeting. Any questions?
Any questions online for David?
I have a quick question. I know the answer to this, but I'll let you answer. If we had questions about the geographic differential, how that would affect Fairbanks, do you know the numbers?
I don't. What I have is the ones that are in place from 1994, which are way out of date. And along with that, came an attachment that I don't have with me right now, but it's the McDowell report that recommends a new set of differentials. I don't have that, but I can certainly forward it to you if you're interested.
Well, I just know, because Staff Alliance is looking at this too, so it's definitely something that staff are interested in. And I believe the most recent report was 2008, done by the state, although it's supposed to be done every 5 years. There's no indication that a new one will be completed. And I believe the number did show that Fairbanks would receive a higher percentage increase than the base, which is Anchorage. And I don't remember the percent. Maybe 3%?
It is 3%.
3%. Yeah. So this is something that would definitely affect UAF employees because that live in Fairbanks. And then, again, those who are outside of Fairbanks in rural areas, would it would be a new number as well compared to what they have now.
And I'd encourage Jeanette in Rural Affairs to keep a tab on this, and we might consider doing our own resolution in support of Faculty Senate. So
definitely.
We had one, I think it was last year, that we sent along, but I don't think it can hurt to continue pushing. And if we're pushing together, I think that will help.
I can leave this with you if that would be. This is the resolution that was drafted. It was not one that we ourselves adopted or anything, but it was drafted and proposed. So if you'd like it as an informal.
That'd be great, yeah.
Any other questions for David? Thank you. And we have with us Cordero Reed and Rick Hahn from ASUAF. Welcome.
Thank you, Brad. So I'm Cordero Reed. So the Senate started on the 8th of September, and we've had 6 meetings since. Relatively, we're a new Senate. There's not many of us who actually came from last year. So far, what we've been doing is electing people to boards and councils. We've elected Sean Clark to Concert Board, Jennifer Chambers to TAB, Elka Ruhi to Media Board, and
I'm also on Media Board, and Cordero is on the Publication Board. Media Board is in charge of hiring the general manager for KSUA, and Publication Board is in charge of hiring the editor for the Sun Star.
We've also been working on reviving Food for Thought Committee, which would oversee the dining services.
Food for Thought Committee is really kind of like a conversation group for members of the student body, as well as members from dining services, to kind of get together and talk about different solutions for, in a way, kind of making students happier about the food that they're eating. They don't have any voting rights or money to move around, so. It's just more of a time to put everything on the table, as it were.
We also have the resident. We're also considering reviving the Residents Housing Association, which is a group of students elected from various dorms on campus to come together for a meeting to talk about grievances or comments or suggestions to make housing better. It would consist of a couple of Residents Life staff members, and so they would just listen to what they had to say.
So kind of going back to the heart of why we're here, I'm the chair of the Public Relations Committee for the Associated Students of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Cordero is on my committee, and basically we're here to make sure that your thoughts are kind of being heard to the students, and the students kind of have an opportunity to communicate with you all. Currently, I mean, just from hearing what you guys are saying about, possibly having a smoke-free campus as well as your Green Dot kind of act, I mean, I'd be super interested in presenting these both to the Senate if one of you wants to come and talk and kind of get our support, and we can kind of also work with students to get them on board. Let's see. Does anyone have any questions or anything? Comments?
I have a question. Has ASUAF had a chance to? I know the smoke-free or tobacco-free proposal is from a group of UAA students, but has ASUAF been able to talk about that? Have you heard from UAF students about how
so
they
far?
Feel?
Sorry. So far, we've talked about it on the floor. We have. We talked about it on the floor, but not as a resolution or anything. It's just a conversation, and that we were interested in it, but we haven't done any investigation.
I, for one, am extremely interested in this. So are you the kind of head of this?
I don't think I'm the head of it. I don't think there's really a head of it at this point, and that's one issue that's been coming up at multiple levels of, what is being proposed. So at this point, as far as I can tell, the administration would like to know, would like to get a sense generally of what staff, faculty, students would support. But I don't think there's an actual, we're considering this, what do you think? But I would be happy to, work with ASUF and share, what I have. Mary Alice, would it be possible to share any of the survey data earlier? You know, from our smoke-free, tobacco-free survey.
Okay. Since we're on the topic and ASUAF and Faculty Senate are interested before they need to leave, it might be helpful to share the data that we've collected.
Is that on the agenda for later?
It is, but you know, I know that it'll be on the agenda, or it's on the agenda for 10 o'clock, so it'd be another hour.
I'll be here.
I found it.
Okay. Alice, have it.
Okay, so basically, is this one on? Okay. So what the chancellor had requested was that staff be given a survey of, he wanted to know what they felt because he wants to represent UAF as a whole, and he thinks that we need to have UAF standing together on a decision to go forward with UA. So let me just get to the. So we actually had a huge turnout on our survey. We had 4 questions. We had 785 staff members answer, which is astounding.
Wow. Let's hope that many vote in our election. I'm sorry. I was thinking out loud.
Mary Alice, what survey is this again?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
What survey is this again?
The smoke-free.
Oh, the smoke-free survey. Okay, thank you.
Okay. So the first question we asked was, do you think UAF, including all UAF properties on and off main campus, should be completely smoke-free and tobacco-free?
Of course, all smoke is going to vote.
I'm sorry, if whoever's online, your phone is your phone's on.
So this question brought in 450 no's and 330 yeses. But where it kind of gets a little iffy is when you start going into the questions further and we ask, do you think UAF, including all UAF properties on and off main campus, should be completely smoke-free? And remember, on this survey, we defined smoke-free and tobacco-free so that everybody knew the differences. And we wanted to do that because we weren't sure that everybody would know that tobacco products sometimes fall into, like, chew and dip. And so this one came back, 389 no's, 389 yeses. We had 7 people that did not respond to this one question. And literally, it split it right down the middle. So the chancellor is going to have a lot of work ahead going through some of this stuff. There was also a comment section, and the comments were actually really good. People felt like smoking, if it was, you know, if the building locations were better marked, if there was a designated area. But a lot of the staff really felt like they didn't want, even a lot of them would say, I am not a smoker, but I do not feel like I should, you know, answer this question and cause a smoker to have to be moved a location, because they felt like it would open up into more things like smoking, drinking. So I don't know when we're going to submit it out to the staff so that they can see it, and we're still literally just got the data in, so we're still going through all the comments, and then it'll be moved over to the chancellor's office.
Can I make one last comment?
Uh-huh.
All right. So the Public Relations Committee for ASUAF, we meet weekly at 4 p.m. in the multi-level lounge or Senate chambers. We post on the ASUAF listserv, and it's open to the public. Do you have any more comments? Or absolutely welcome and encouraged to attend. And my email address is now on my card.
Can you give that location and time again?
4 p.m. on Tuesdays. And we kind of change between the multi-level lounge and the ASUAF office, both downstairs.
Thank you.
I actually had a question for Mary Allen. So the major response behind that survey was that most of the staff didn't feel like, most of the staff felt like it would be discriminatory against smokers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions, either regarding the survey, or we'll have a chance to, I'm sure, ask Mary Alice more questions during staff affairs, but other questions either regarding the survey or to ASUAF? Please go ahead.
Just a quick question. One of the things that came up in our conversations with the Chancellor and Provost is that we have a regulation currently on the UAF campus, so you're not supposed to smoke within 50 feet of a building entrance, which is just not enforced at all. Or at least I don't see it enforced at all. And I'm just kind of curious if there was anything in the survey. You only asked those two questions, or were there anything in the survey about enforcing existing rules?
There was four questions, but no, we didn't ask about enforcing the current rules that were in place. We were just looking for what the staff felt as far as a smoke-free or tobacco-free campus. But those discussions are going on about enforcing the regulations. I know at the last staff promotion thing down here, one of the tables, I can't think of who it is, was handing out pamphlets about the current rules and their enforcement of it.
The health and safety fair?
Yes, the health and safety fair, sorry.
And I had one other thing about Green Dot. When Ashley and I met with them, they're looking for a fall 2014 implementation date, but they're currently doing trainings and identifying interested people to do training, or at least to start raising awareness. I can put them in touch with you. Would it be all right to give them if you want ASUF's contact information or your email addresses?
Heck yes.
Okay, can definitely do that.
Also, I forgot to mention one more thing. I'm on the RISE board for the Office of Sustainability, so if you guys have any cool ideas about conserving, reduce, reuse, recycle, anything like that, please feel free to bring those issues to me as well.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. Any other questions? Yes.
When I was initially contacted about Green Dot, the training that they wanted us to participate in lasted for something like either it was a full day or two full days. I mean, it was an amazing amount of time, and I was just kind of curious what are they proposing in your conversations with them as far as training length.
I don't remember her mentioning training length.
No.
Okay.
But we also, Ashley and I, were invited by Kate Sunwood.
Right.
To attend that August training, and for the same reason we weren't able to go. It was one full day plus, I think, a second full day, but there was a period where it was, you know, a 1 hour where they were inviting anyone generally to come and attend.
I had a colleague talk to me about it. This is Chris, for those of you online. A concern that my colleague raised was the potential issue of having similar trainings offered by Green Dot or by the safety folks here at UAF or by training folks at Statewide. And so if there are three places where we're doing very similar training, I would suggest that they talk to each other and maybe come up with one. Because the concern David brought up, I mean, if you're doing 2 days of training, that's a large time commitment. If you triple that, it's something that isn't sustainable. The other thing that I'm more concerned about is Green Dot's pretty expensive. It's not free. And so, again, if we're duplicating things, or at least are doing stuff similarly already in-house. I'm not against Green Dot. I like that movement. However, in current fiscal climate that we're in, I'd like to double-check and
find out if we're not duplicating things and spending money to do so, because I think that money could be spent then better maybe on our in-house stuff that might cost us less.
I will clarify that Green Dot is sponsored by the state, so the university is not necessarily paying for it, but yes, I see where if we still are duplicating, there's still costs involved, but just to clarify that Green Dot is not paid for by UAF at this time.
It's paid for by the university statewide?
It's paid for by the state of Alaska.
Okay.
This is Adam Kane at the Bristol Bay campus.
Hi, Adam.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. The bullying issue isn't necessarily that it doesn't impact us very much here at the campus. We don't have that many full-time students on campus, and we don't have students living here. We don't have dorms, so we don't have that issue. But you had brought up something about the recycling and the energy conservation, and that is a big issue out here, and we're often left out of the discussion. So when you do bring it to your meetings and elsewhere, we would appreciate if you could remember the rural campuses and that we also have materials that we need to recycle and get rid of. Thanks.
Thanks, Adam. Other questions or comments? All right, it is 9:30. We are moving ahead of our schedule, so with this group's permission, I'd like to go ahead and you know, move past you know, guest speaker and other sections as appropriate, and we can come back to them at that time. So next on our agenda is unfinished business, and I don't believe we have any unfinished business at this time. Does anyone have anything to want to bring up there? Okay, and then on to I've almost skipped new business. So to our new business, we have attached a proposed meeting schedule for 2014. Has everyone had a chance to take a look at it, see if there are dates we might want to change, or if there's a date that doesn't work for you, please feel free to bring it up. If it doesn't work for you, it may not work for someone else, and we can move it. But once we approve the schedule, it'll be harder to adjust.
I do have a question. I just see that a large majority of them say that they're audio conference. Does that mean they're not going to be face-to-face?
No. I mean, it'll still be face-to-face in the sense of there'll be a meeting space at UAF. The audio conference refers to the audio conference versus face-to-face refers to the meetings where we fly in our rural representatives versus when we don't fly them in.
Okay. That counts.
I would accept a motion to approve the 2014 Staff Council meeting schedule.
So moved.
Second.
Do we need to have a vote on that? Any discussion? Okay. All right. So hearing no discussion, all those in favor in the room and online, please say aye. And if you're in the room, raise your hand.
Aye.
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 Any opposition in the room or online? Any abstentions? All right. The motion passes unanimously. We have a schedule for 2014. All right, so let's go ahead and the Chancellor should be joining us in about 10 minutes. So we'll go ahead and move to committee reports. Richard is not here today. Is there anyone who anyone with elections who'd like to talk about the committee? And we have an attached report. All right. Kirsten, membership and rules.
I don't have anything really to add to the report that was submitted, except that, you know, if we're going to look at kind of parliamentary procedure and maybe put together some kind of training or information for staff council. So if anybody has any particular questions or issues that that you think we should address, just, you know, email that to me so I can include it. And then we'll be, hopefully our bylaws are complete at this point, and I really haven't had a chance to go over kind of the final version to make sure it's correct, but hopefully we're done with that for now.
Any questions for Kirsten? All right, rural affairs, Jeanette?
Due to some scheduling difficulty, there, about half the committee met, so thank you very much, but the other half, including myself, was not there. So we technically have not met, but we're back in action. First week of November, we meet the first Tuesday at 10 a.m., both online at Rasmussen Library in the Kayak Room and via Google Hangout. So if you are interested in attending, that's 10 a.m., first Tuesday. Contact me if you are interested. And thank you also to David for this geographic salary differential report. We will be talking about that next time.
Questions for rural affairs? Mary Alice from staff affairs?
So staff affairs met, and we developed the survey for the smoke-free campus and also for the performance evaluation survey for staff. Both of those are complete, and results will probably be going out next week. We also worked on a coffee or lunch with the chancellor, and he has agreed to coffee with 10 members of the university. So next week we'll be launching on the blog a question, which will be, if you could ask the chancellor a question, what would it be? And depending on the number of responses, it'll be a random lottery to be pulled. Your question will be submitted to the chancellor ahead of time so he has time to prepare. And then it will be an informal, just 10 employees and coffee with the chancellor. Other than that, that'll be all coming out next week.
Mary Alice?
Yes.
How do you decide what those 10 to 12 employees are going, who they're going to be to have coffee with the chancellor?
Depending on how many questions we get, we're going to just enter the names into a lottery and just pull names.
Okay, so if you enter a question, you get to possibly have coffee with him.
Correct.
Okay.
And we hope to make this an ongoing a meeting with the chancellor. So if this one's successful, then we can set up another one. And we're working with the advocacy group to keep it ongoing once it's started.
Okay, thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions?
Do you have any preliminary results from the staff evaluation form?
I do. So this one we have less response, but we still had over, I think it was 500 responses for this one. A lot of people had issues with the wording of it. They didn't like the truly amazing employee to the not working out employee. They felt like we were an institute for higher knowledge and that our performance review should be treated as such. So again, a lot of good comments on this one that we're still going through, but for the most part, it doesn't look like UAS staff, the wording in it.
Professionalism of the wording is
yes. Does anyone else have any questions?
I wanted to add that I heard from multiple people that the tobacco-free survey was really, really well done. They liked it a lot. So thank you very much.
Thank you. That's all I have for staff affairs.
Advocacy and Leslie?
Now that my schedule is finally, hopefully, allowing me to breathe, I'm going to try to pull a meeting together in the next 2 weeks. I've been working with Nicole. I'm going to try to get a list of 10 topics out to everybody to get an idea of what you think the Advocacy Council should champion. And again, Mary Alice, I really want to thank her for taking the question to the Chancellor about doing the coffee with the Chancellor in my place. That was awesome. That is something that I think is a great opportunity. And it's not just for staff council. I would really like you to encourage and pass the word out to your folks so they know that this is an opportunity, I think, that they can utilize to have a sit-down one-on-one, in a non-threatening manner to talk with the Chancellor and maybe get their ideas out there to him and say, just have a casual conversation. The more ideas that we get submitted, the longer this opportunity will present itself. The Carolyn Sampson Award, if we want to be on the selection committee, we need to start thinking about that very soon, because that is done in early, first of the part of the year for the selection. The other thing I'd like to try to think about is, if we do a new fundraising and set up an award through the foundation, what do we want to utilize it for? We kind of locked ourselves in really tightly last time around and set it up for travel only, and it made it almost impossible. And we have money sitting at the foundation that pretty much is very, very difficult to use for any staff members to take advantage of. So I really would like to, I definitely want to encourage the Staff Advocate Council Committee has a very low membership. I need help. So please consider, I'll be putting out a call once we have more solid ideas. If you could, even if you're not on the committee, to give me some of your time to help with the ideas once they start rolling. But to consider being on the committee to help make these ideas come to reality, because I can't do it alone, and I'm going to be losing a couple of my members in the next couple of months. And I think that is all I have.
Any questions for Leslie? All right. Thank you. Chancellor Rogers, are you on the line? Okay, well, let's jump to the Staff Healthcare Committee. And Leslie, we might cut you off at 9:45, and we'll check and see if the Chancellor is there.
That's fine. The Staff Healthcare Committee met yesterday, and we went over several things, primarily what happened on the Joint Healthcare Committee meeting. Apparently, it's still a big hot topic that everybody is interested in, is the WIN battle. There is a stay of award. The court system was due to come up with their response yesterday. We were still waiting as of yesterday to find out what their decision was. But one comment that was made is that most companies that offer the WIN-type program do not offer a face-to-face. So what we have already in place at the university meets what most other universities already have. So if past this roadblock and get healthy roads, and if WIN, which I can't say one way or another, they'll get their decision in place, and yes, it's most likely going to happen within calendar year 14, and if it gets pushed even farther, it might not happen until fiscal year 14 or 15. We're in 14 now. Take advantage of the online services that we have. There will be a lot of call-in services. The employee assistance program does quite a bit for most people. Another, as everybody states, is a hot topic is the smoking. We have an excellent tobacco cessation service. It's got coaching services. It's got prescription help. It'll help you with the tobacco gum or whatever. We need to have more involvement for those that are needing those services to keep them alive. The other things that are coming down the road in regards to the healthcare changes.
Pardon, Leslie, can I interrupt? It's 9:45. Chancellor Rogers, are you on the line? Okay, sorry, I heard someone call in, so I wanted to check.
No worries whatsoever. 2014 healthcare changes, we've met most of them that are required by the new laws, one being letting everybody know about the new health portal and the costs if you don't take place or take part of. One thing that is going to come down and needs to be explained, this is not going to happen next year, but it'll be coming down the pipe, is that to help avoid what's called the Cadillac tax, is that they're going to try, and they haven't figured out how yet, but to kind of unhook the vision and dental from the health and pharmacy. It doesn't mean they're not going to offer it to you, but it's not going to be embedded as one. It's going to be an accepted policy. You'll have to say, I accept the vision, I accept the dental. You know, we're still going to get the benefits, but to keep it to where we're not paying more, the university doesn't get hit hard with these extra taxes. And again, it's still something that's being worked out, and it's not going to happen this year. It's coming, I think, in 2015. That's something that they're investigating. Also, that will be coming down is that your pharmacy copay will go towards an out-of-pocket maximum. Right now, I think it's on an individual. It will also start going as a family out-of-pocket maximum. This health care committee, staff health committee, would like to also ask that, you know, you talk to your constituents and find out what's working for everybody, what's not, and what you'd like to see evolve that is reasonable for health care. We are looking at other institutions to see what they offer, to see if we're, you know, within comparable offerings. You know, within the bait, we're primarily sticking within the Northwest states area, primarily like Oregon State. We can't really go a lot with state employees because most of them are union and we are not. If you have any questions or concerns or need further clarification, you can find my email on the staff council website. Send it to me. We'll do our best to get it put forth and see if I can get you an answer.
Questions for Leslie?
I have one. This is Jeanette Altman for those online. Leslie, regarding splitting the policies up, I think you used the term a Cadillac tax. This is there an anticipation that splitting the policies into health, dental, and vision will push more cost onto individual employees, or is it just separated for tax purposes?
I believe it's just separated for tax purposes.
Okay. Thank you.
Leslie, I have one question regarding that also. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is Robin online. So if the vision and dental are separate from the medical, does that also mean that you can choose not to take them also?
I can't say if you opt to take this is something that's still in very raw form. If you opt to take it, it does not mean that it may reduce your premium.
Okay.
Like I say, it will probably just be you accept it, and there may not be a cost to accept it.
Okay.
Like I say, there's a lot of gray area that they have to figure out, and they've got a couple of years to make this happen.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Leslie regarding the Staff Healthcare Committee or healthcare? All right. Thank you, Leslie. I haven't heard anyone join us online, and I noticed we pushed past our break. So I'm guessing there's probably not going to be an opposition, but shall we take a five-minute break and reconvene at 9:55?
Yes.
All right. Let's all be back here in 5 minutes, and we'll call for the chancellor and see if he's here then. We're not all quite together yet, but let's go ahead and come back to order. Okay. my mic gone bad again? I think I sound okay. All right.
Good on the phone.
Sounds good.
And I understand Chancellor Rogers is with us now.
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
Thanks.
All right, I think we are all back together whenever you are ready, Chancellor.
Okay. Don't have a whole lot. I've been traveling the last week and a half, meeting the athletic conference, Great Northwest Athletic Conference, CEO board. We've invited a new institution into our athletic conference and would expect in two seasons to start playing Concordia University in Portland, Oregon, just one more. One more team for the Nanooks to be. And then at a University of the Arctic Board of Governors meeting and Arctic Circle meeting in Reykjavik, Iceland. I just got back late last night. Apologize for being a little late. Still adjusting to having had a 22-hour day yesterday. And really only have one item I want to raise, and then I'd be glad to answer any questions. I wanted the staff council to be aware of a letter received by the university yesterday from the House and Senate Finance Committees of the Legislature. Not sure what the impact will be, but essentially they're talking about the budget challenges that the state is facing and that they're asking the university to hold the line in contract talks with any employee groups. And in particular, they say don't look to the recent contracts at the state level because the funding picture is bleaker than when those negotiations took place, and because of the massive unfunded liability of the retirement system and healthcare issues. So their bottom line is very little appetite for increased cost in this precarious financial environment. That's a quote. So I think that will further set the tone and gives us a sense of what the budget picture is going to be in the upcoming year. I think we've already, although the board hasn't made the final decision, we've already made the administration's recommendation to the board for compensation, and I wouldn't expect that to change, but the impact on our budget could if the legislature basically says, well, raises are your decision, but you have to absorb the cost yourself. And I wouldn't be too surprised to see that outcome. So again, I think that really calls on us to continue to look for ways to economize. And particularly, as I've told staff council several times, we're looking for those ways that don't directly impact services, things we can do that affect the use of space, use of energy, use of non-personnel, and reducing those costs. So we continue to seek advice and ideas from throughout UAF. Sometimes people who are out working see opportunities, and don't be afraid to put them in. We'll take advantage of them. And with that, I'm going to stop, and I'll be glad to answer any questions that members of the staff council may have.
Questions for Chancellor Rogers? I have one. If the legislature comes back and says, we don't want to fund, this compensation increase, do you think, and I realize this is probably way too early to even answer, but would it be a matter of the university then saying, well, we can fund 2%, but we're going to start making cuts, or say we would only fund, 1%, the 50% of the overall increase that we had already said we'd take care of? Does that seem like something likely or something that could happen?
Well, either of those are possibilities. I wouldn't, it's hard to speculate after only, having seen this letter for an hour, but my expectation is that we would go forward with the compensation plan that we think appropriate. That would result, obviously, in further reductions, and we'd feel some pain from it. But I would, I mean, my gut feeling, and it's only that at this point, is that they wouldn't see a reduction in the compensation plan that we decided on.
Any other questions for the Chancellor? Any questions online? I do not see or hear any.
All right. Well, thank you, and look forward to seeing you in person next month.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm, bye.
And we have with us Brad Lobland, Interim Director of UAFHR.
Yes, it is.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
It's kind of early. I have a lot of bodyguards with me today. My staff is in the back, so try to keep down the negative comments. I'm just kidding. The reason why I'm here today is I wanted to come and introduce myself to the new staff council members, if there are any, and then also kind of let you know that I will be more visible with the staff council meetings and trying to collaborate where appropriate. Because I think this group is obviously the forefront for staff issues, and also some of the things that you're working on or concerned about, I'm also concerned about or maybe working on. And so where we can collaborate, I think it's important to do that, and I've been asked to do that. And so I will start attending staff council meetings when I can and when the calendar permits. But I do want to start working on some things together. One is just performance evaluations. That's a big topic right now in the university. And I'm here to report that we are actually now tracking evaluations. It is not a perfect system, I'm just here to say. But we are attempting to start to track performance evaluations because we're hearing a lot of rumblings from people that my supervisor has never given me a performance evaluation, or I haven't had one in 10 years. Or I've had three in the last 90 days. So what we want to try to do is push this message and train people to performance evaluate because, one, we have to for accreditation. Two, it's in the regulation. And three, it's really the right thing to do as a manager. Where some of the struggles come from HR leadership and the leadership is forcing people to do performance evaluation. If you've ever had a supervisor forced to do a performance evaluation, it's either, one, really bad, because they've been forced to do it, they're not good at it, and they don't want to do it, or it's glowing and the employee is actually not glowing. And so there has to be a way to influence supervisors and show them the advantages of actually doing a performance evaluation. But bottom line is we have to do them because we need to show accreditation that we're evaluating staff annually. So in HR, we've attempted to create a database so that we can start tracking evaluations. I'm not going to be driving by your house at night saying, where are those evaluations, people? What I am going to start doing is we're going to start calling departments and saying, we have noticed that X employees haven't been evaluated. Have they been evaluated? One, because we don't want to assume that people aren't doing that. It may have not made it to HR. And so that's the first thing we're going to do. If the employee doesn't have an evaluation, there may be a really good reason for that. And we just want some documentation that says, look, I just started last week. I'm the supervisor, and I really need about 6 months so that I can evaluate these fairly. And as long as you write a memo to the file, to the personnel file of that employee, that covers us for that period to say there is going to be an evaluation, but not currently. We don't want to force new supervisors to do evaluations either. We want them to get some time into the position. So we're not going to hold a hammer over yet. We're going to really try to work with supervisors and help them do the evaluations for the employees. We're getting a lot of grapevine messages about evaluations, and so we need to do them. It's part of performance management. It's part of active management, as the Chancellor has said in the past. Evaluations is a crucial part of management, and we need to do them. So that's one of the first things that I wanted to talk about. So my name is Brad Loveland. I am the interim HR director. This is my 15th month as interim, and it's been a great ride. I've been interim twice now, so I do have a little bit of experience with HR in my previous life as interim director. This is my second. I feel like I'm in a boxing match, So this is my second round at HR director. It is stressful. There's a lot of things going on in the university. The chancellor has mentioned several times at these meetings that there are vertical cuts possibly coming with our budget climate, our government climate. And one of the things that we are actively trying to work on, and I'm not going to paint a rosy picture here and say that it's all done, but it is one of the initiatives, is to start doing shared services. And also, we need to encourage supervisors to allow people to grow professionally. And whether that be take classes, whether that be take Skillsoft courses, whether that be go work in another department and get training on a process. I'll give you an example without giving you too many details. I'm working with an employee whose job is going away eventually. The job is just going away because the skills are not needed anymore. We are working with that employee to say, look, for 2 hours a day, would you be able to go over to travel and train? Would you be able to go to procurement and train? Take these trainings online. Take these trainings, the supervisory training. Take these things so that you can broaden your skills so that when this does come, you're more viable to apply for positions. Those are some of the things that we need as an institution to work on. We hire people, and then 10 years goes by, and we look and say, what has this person done? We really don't know. And that's part of the organization's problem, and also a supervisor's, to say we need to be more aware of what people are doing, what skills they have. A lot of people do professional development outside of their occupation, and the supervisor doesn't even know it. That leads me into my second thing, which is a learning management system. The university really needs to get one learning management system, and what I mean by that is for tracking performance evaluations, for tracking training. I don't know if you get frustrated when you're trying to find a specific training and you have to go to 5 or 10 different websites to find what training you need as an employee. Pat Pitney has tasked administrative services with pulling every training together that admin does and putting them on one website. That's a huge step in a good direction to say, as a new person or an existing employee, what trainings are available by the university. Right now you have to thumb through several websites. That is one initiative that we're doing, is to put them all together. And the other initiative is getting behind one learning management system. I did meet with Ellucian last week, which they have met with the president and shared the software. So that is going through a business plan, and eventually it's probably going to go through the staff alliance, staff council groups. But that's another thing that we need to look at, is how do we track things here? And we need to be able to track things across the university. If you go from UAA to UAF, we should know what you've done as far as professional development or trainings in the university. So I'm going to open it up for questions for me. Anybody have any HR burning questions, concerns? Come on.
I do. Thanks for coming. This is Chris Bex, for those of you online. I'm in Unit 15. My manager, as well as the director and their boss, have done performance evaluations this year and last year. Not using the performance evaluation that was on the survey. I'm a firm believer that one size doesn't fit all. Are you tracking those type of evaluations, or are you doing it by department? I mean,
we're actually tracking them by department, but we're tracking any sort of an evaluation that comes in.
Cool.
Non-medical, but any sort of evaluation. So what I say in my trainings when I teach the performance evaluation piece is we do have two online. That one is a short form, one is a long form. And if you're an HR person, the longer the form, the better. But there is a long form out there. But what I tell people is if you're using something that works for you, go for it. As long as it has some standards, which is a rating system, comment, and some sort of feedback, goals, we're okay with it. I just ask that you share it with us, because the first place that an employee calls when they're upset with an evaluation is HR. And so we like to be able to say, well, we understand the madness that your supervisor has here and how they rated you. That's all. But if you have your own form right now, I encourage you to use it. Because, again, I don't want to say you have to use this form, because then it's not productive for supervisors and employees. If there's options, then they're more apt to get done. And some positions don't need the long form. Some positions need the shorter form. So I encourage
Thank
people
you.
To use what they have.
All right. Thanks.
Nothing? No other questions? You have some questions?
This is Greg Simpson. You talked about the learning management system. The company is called Elysium, is that right?
Elysium.
Elysium. Okay. And they're right now presenting a business plan of how that might work if we
They're working on one to present, yeah. And I don't know the inner workings. I met with them last week, and they kind of asked me, what are the two top things that you want to see in a learning management system? And I said, well, my top two is the performance evaluation tracking and training tracking, so that any supervisor can log in and say, wow, this employee has done X, Y, and Z training. So that's the two things that I'm pushing. But I don't even know if it's a very expensive. But right now we have People Admin. We have all of these different software programs out there, and none of them are really talking. And so really we want one to talk. And that way if you transfer, I transfer to UAA, somebody down there can pull up all my trainings and everything that I've done here at UAS.
Yeah, I was going to say, because right now we have tracking systems for safety training. It's a completely different database. We have tracking systems for HR. You're doing a database for performance evaluation, so somehow these things all have to be able to talk to each other.
Yes, absolutely, because we have FileMaker Pro and Risk Management is using Intellect, and so as an employee, it's very confusing where, what portal, what website, where you need to go to do this stuff. So if we had one area where people could log in, as long as it's intuitive, I think it'll be a huge advantage for employees.
So are you looking at other companies as well, looking at different options?
Well, Hired, part of the group Hired that Pat Penny started to look at the recruitment processes, has also looked at some software programs for recruitment system. Elysian has a recruiting software package. I don't know if that's going to be part of the plan or not. But we have looked at some other companies, but really it's going to be a system type driven thing. And I'm just getting behind it because I really need one. I don't, at this point, anything will work for me as long as it's accessible to the university wide. I'll work with any program.
Hey, Brad, just to clarify, I don't think most people know Elysian is Banner.
Oh, sorry, yes. Elysian is part of Banner. So that's why it's another advantage to have Elysian part of this, is because they communicate with Banner, which has been part of our problem with UAK jobs and some of the other software programs we have. They're not compatible with Banner.
Hi, this is Robin online. Can you spell that word, Elysian?
Yeah, I can try. It's E-L-L-U-C-I-A-N.
Okay, that's what I thought. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Brad. So I took the supervisor's training, and it was very good. But one of the things that I kind of struggle with and other supervisors have talked with is that there isn't a straight line to HR. A supervisor can't pick up the phone and call a person in HR and have a question answered. You have to go through your PPA, and it becomes this, like telling when you were kids and you're on the phone line or you tell someone something, and by the time it gets around, it's twice as bad as it started. And so sometimes when you really just want, as a supervisor, reassurance or, you know, okay, this is kind of where you should go with it, it's not easy to get that answer. And so my question is there anything in the works to help that, or have you heard any issues concerning that?
I haven't actually heard any issues concerning that, but HR shouldn't be, you should be able to call HR regardless and talk to your consultant. If you can't talk to your consultant, you can talk to another manager in the department, or you can talk to myself or Anita Hartman, who's the associate director. But you should not, nobody should be told that they cannot come to HR or not call HR for anything. If you're not getting the advice that you like from your consultant or from your HR PPA, you can always call me, and we can then settle it out. But sometimes it is the telephone game where there's pieces of information missing, and that's sometimes where all the problems come from right there. And as far as the PPA versus the HR consultant, as long as you let people know, I mean, that's the biggest thing. If you come to me and ask me a question and I help you, just route back to your PPA and let them know, hey, I did talk to Brad. This is how we're going to proceed. It's mainly, I think, when people are left out of the communication loop is when people feel like they're not getting anywhere. But you should be able to call your HR consultant directly or myself about an HR issue. There should be no filtering.
Thank you.
This is Selena at the Bristol Bay campus. Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Okay. My question is about the supervisor training. I've been in my position for a year, and there hasn't been any supervisor training. I know it's mandatory, and I've been trying to comply, but all of it is basically face-to-face. and there hasn't been the opportunity to take it online, like eLive, and we have several supervisors who haven't been able to complete their training because of that. Do you know if there's anything in the works for us to be able to get them at our real campuses?
Yeah, actually, this is perfect timing that you asked that question. I met with the directors, the rural site directors, last week, and we rolled out that I would come out and do the trainings for rural sites, or we could bring rural sites together. You will be seeing something very shortly. The directors are supposed to get back to me, but I probably will be traveling out to the rural sites with the consultant and doing the trainings for you guys. I don't want to do them e-live because they're interactive, and I really want to I'm not an online type person, so I like to see people. I'm an HR person. So you will be seeing something shortly on a schedule, and you will get trained this winter.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And I would like to make a comment on the last person who spoke. I never have any problems getting any feedback from my HR consultant. I just send an email, and if it's not very clear, then I usually ask again the question, and I get very good clarification from our consultant.
Thank you. I think part of the issue is that it's not necessarily the questions that you can wait for an answer. I think it's some of those things that happen in a moment's notice, or you need to talk to somebody right away because you have to react.
Yeah.
And if you're able to ask a question and walk away and wait for a couple of days, that's different. Then I think these are more triage-type situations. You know, I have an employee with a knife. I mean, don't call me. Call the police. But that's happened before. So. But I think that's more what you're talking about, Mary. Okay. Thank you, though.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tricia Winters. You talked about needing supervisors to allow employees to get professional development. And there's been some people in my unit who've talked about that difficulty, one with feeling like they're kind of wearing multiple hats with trying to cover additional positions, so they feel like there is no time to go and get professional development, and others whose supervisors just don't see the need. You know, in your position, you're in one case an admin, so you really don't need any other professional development if they don't foresee them moving into anything more. Do you have a vehicle or a methodology you're planning to approach supervisors with to encourage that?
Well, the Chancellor's been trying to push the message. I have been trying to push the message in the supervisory trainings, and then also I had a phone call that someone was informed that they would not work with anybody in their department on taking classes during the day, and I just called the supervisor and said, hey, let's talk about this, and after we talked for 5 minutes, they realized that maybe that's a really strong statement to say across the board, I'm not going to allow it, but I think we have to manage. We're in a really interesting climate right now because we have vacancies on hold. People are overworked. They're doing other jobs. And then now we're saying go out and get developed, but do your job. It's a fine balance. And supervisors have to be creative and try to figure out what work can go. I think we get caught up in this is the day-to-day stuff that has to get done, and we don't ever look to say, do we really need to do this? And I'm going to give you a small example of something that the last director looked at. I mean, this is a small example, but bonuses. Does HR really need to sign off on a bonus? And she said, no. It's a step in the process we don't need to do. We just need to know that they're going to get one so we can attach it. Whether people agree with that or not, we looked at it and said, do we really need to approve that? Do we really need to approve student 25% increase? I mean, those are the types of things that we looked at to say, where could we then let go of some work? And I think supervisors also have to be creative and look at their employees and say, what work is necessary right now and what work is fun and busy and that we can get rid of. And I'm going to tell you, in every job on this campus, there is something in a job that could wait or go away at some point or be delegated to somebody else or shifted. A lot of people have control issues, and so they want to keep everything in their area rather than allowing facilities or an expert to do it. I think those are some of the things that we have to start looking at, too. But it's more just about pushing the message, and when we find out about it, we have conversations with supervisors because we do not have a policy that says you cannot take classes. We need to be able to balance the work but also balance the fact that we are a college, we're an institution of higher ed, and we should be encouraging people to grow. Whether they want to go up or over, they should be encouraged to grow.
Thank you.
So
So I have a question. I should apologize because I haven't followed up on this with anyone at Staff Alliance or at a higher level. But the last time you and I talked, we talked about a hotline that UA statewide would like to have rolled out by the end of the year. Do you know, is there anything new on that?
I got an email yesterday, which I haven't read, from the new CHRO, who is the Chief Human Resource Officer, Eric. And he was talking about the hotline and wanted feedback by the end of the month. I have mixed emotions on a hotline. As long as I don't have to answer it, I'm okay. But I am worried about the multiple avenues of how you can complain and file grievances, complaint. We need one avenue to report things. We need one avenue to file grievances, and it needs to be a really clear process. We are kind of working on the process of filing a grievance and complaints because I think that whole process needs to be revisited and redrafted so that anybody can understand what they need to do when they want to file a grievance or complaint. But as far as the hotline, I have mixed emotions. As long as we can then take the grapevine, suggestion boxes, all of these things and roll them into the hotline, I'm kind of optimistically hoping that's going to be good. We want to be able to offer employees ways to express concerns. And that is one way to do it so that there's a third-party person doing it, whereas you're not calling me and complaining about somebody and you think there's going to be some sort of reprisal. So there is an advantage to the hotline as long as we consider all the other avenues. And that's something I'm working on with the CHRO. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
What are your thoughts on the performance appraisal tool that the president has rolled out?
Mary Alice, would you like to take a crack at that?
So we just completed a survey. I don't know if you saw it going around. I was kind of chuckling as you were saying things about it. So first we distinguished whether they were staff, supervisor, or both. And there seems to be a lot of both out there. Surprisingly is that we had close to 500 people respond. And one of the questions we asked was, have you received a performance evaluation from your UAF supervisor in the last year? And the numbers were really close. We had 199 yes and 222 no. So it's getting out there and people are getting aware of it. There was a lot of concern in the comments with the professionalism of the wording of the rankings for the new one. That's
really amazing.
Yes, and no longer needed, I think is the other one.
Not working out.
Oh, sorry, not working out.
Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of that was, they just felt it was a very casual wording, but then a very strict format of how you could actually grade. But we have those results. We just got them in, and we had a lot of comments with them, and it's something that we can share with you.
I would appreciate that because this is not a mandatory form that we're going to use that I'm aware of, and I don't know where in the stages it is right now, but I have made my comments to statewide. I think some of the form has value, but we need to evaluate people and how they do their job first before we can start looking at how they hold their character and their integrity. I'm really worried about that. I first just want to say, hey, let's do evaluations and let's do our jobs. Before we start looking at people's character. But I've made my comments, and I was just curious if there was a consensus here of support or...
And I think when Brad and I met with the chancellor, his consensus seemed to be not so much going towards a new one, but more getting...
options?
Getting supervisors just to do them and get on board with that first before we try to throw in another performance evaluation with them.
I agree.
So I have another question slash comment, and I apologize. This may be a bit of a gotcha question, but so I learned, and I may have been behind the curve on this, but I learned recently that I guess we have some telecommuting forms, but that from an HR perspective, non-exempt employees, are highly discouraged. For telecommuting, and I don't want to get too much into that. I sort of read it and see there's some good arguments for it, but the one thing I noted is that doesn't seem to be reflected on any of our forms.
Yeah, and the form, the out-of-state form, is in need of updating really bad, and so we are working on updating the form. But I'll just I mean, I'll tell you my philosophy on out-of-state workers, and whether people agree with me or not, but we need people to work in the state. I mean, we're Alaskans, and we want people to work in Alaska and support Alaskan economy. And so when we have people that are leaving the state and wanting to go to another state where maybe the cost of living is very low, and they're an admin generalist, so they answer phones, they file, they do some other things, and they're asking to work out of state. Sometimes we have to look at those things and say, why are we doing this? Because there's not just letting people go work out of state. There are tax issues that surround letting people work out of state, because some states say once you step foot into our state, you pay taxes. Some states say no, it's $1,200. Some states say it's 30 days. So there's different tax liabilities, and it's very hard for statewide to continue to have all of these people working and out of country, out of state, where do we really need these people to? Are there people here that can do the job? If this is a really specialized field, and or maybe it's a grant-funded position where there's just a year left and this person can technically work off campus, off site, then that's something that we would consider. But we need to wrap our arms around how many people we have. Eventually, we're going to have more people working outside the state than we actually do in the university. And that just causes a lot of issues with taxes and things like that. So we are working on the form, and the policy too needs to be updated, because it needs to be more intuitive for supervisors to say before they even submit the form, these are the criteria, and you meet the criteria. Because right now they're signing it saying it's fine, it comes to us, and we're saying no. So the criteria has to be better defined.
This is Mary Alice again. And Brad, I don't want to step on your toes, but just to clarify, as staff affairs chairs, one of the questions we're getting for the non-exempt is, why is an exempt employee locally here allowed to work from home, but a non-exempt is not? And I know obviously there's good reasons, but if you could give a little bit of clarification on that.
Well, typically because a non-exempt employee is paid on the hour, an exempt employee is paid in 40 hours to do the job, whether it takes longer or less. I'd have to get clarification on why it's such a big problem. I'm not really looking at the non-exempt. I'm looking at the job duties to say what are they going to be doing from home. If you're a receptionist, you can't work at home whether you're exempt or non-exempt. I also think some of the non-exempt positions are more lower level, and they require people to be in the office because of the types of job they do. They're dealing with the public. They're dealing with people. They're dealing with the employees in the department. So it just depends on the job, but I can get clarification and send it to you guys on the non-exempt versus exempt and what the fear is there.
And then just a quick follow-up on that. One thing that I noted is that our emergency closure policy procedure from 2011, one of the options is in an emergency closure with supervisor approval, you could work from home. And that would be obviously a very short-term working from home, very short-term telecommuting. But I was wondering if there's a policy that says, hey, we don't want non-exempt employees to be working from home, if that would interfere with that, and that would be something to look at.
I'll check that. Any other questions, concerns, comments? Thanks.
Thank you very
much. Spelling bee?
What do you want me to spell?
I don't know.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much. And I think we're still 5 minutes fast at this point, and I think we're up to our external UAF committee reports. So is there anyone on external committees who would like to give more information other than what's in the written report?
I have for Staff Appreciation Day, I guess just a note that we are looking at changing the name from Staff Appreciation Day to, Staff Training Appreciation Fellowship and Fun Day, so that actually spells out Staff, STAFF. just because the acronym, if you look at Staff Appreciation Day, when you try to make it an acronym, it turns out to be SAD Day. The acronym, I believe, is just waiting for basically a general approval from the Chancellor's Office and Cabinet before that becomes official.
Can you repeat that again, Ashley?
Staff Training Appreciation Fellowship and Fun Day.
Okay.
I'm going to miss SAD as an acronym. I like it.
Ashley, hi, this is Kim Eames, and I'm just wondering if there's any way the Chancellor will be able to show his appreciation for staff by not having it 3 days before academic staff go off contract.
Unfortunately, timing is always a problem when it comes to that. We do set the schedule a year in advance, so we already have a date for next year, so there's really no way to change it. We do take into account several options, the fact that Mondays and Fridays are completely out, so that leaves 3 days a week. And that leaves for 9-month contracts. That's usually the Friday after commencement. And we can't do anything really before commencement because there's no rooms available when classes are on schedule. So we're pretty much stuck to Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of the week after commencement. And then based off of that, we go with what day the Chancellor has available, which is usually the Wednesday. So it doesn't work for everyone. It does turn out to be the day that grades are due as well. For any faculty volunteers, that affects them. We do have faculty volunteers. And then for anyone who works in the, you know, registrar's office grading area, it's not an ideal date, but we're pretty limited in days that we can select.
So, Ashley, what is that date for next year?
May 14th.
Thank you.
Does it have to be the very end of the semester? I mean, is there any reason it couldn't be in February?
We're pretty much limited to the days when students are not here, because otherwise there's no classroom space. There's no space available to do anything.
Right. Oh, well, let's sigh. I don't know about other departments. I do the work of 2.5 people, and I'm lucky if I can go to one thing. So it's very frustrating because I don't feel appreciated at all. It's just a reminder of how much I have to do.
We appreciate you, Kim. We'll have a special Kim Day.
Oh, luckily my students often come in and make me feel special, so that's good. But yeah, so that's my 2 cents of whinging.
More questions about what will soon be Staff Day?
By the way, awesome acronym. Very impressive.
It took a long time to come up with 2 F's.
I did have a, this is not related to our external committees, but a quick announcement. If you're here in the room as a guest, if you could please sign in to, we have a little sign-in sheet on the back table. If you could do that on your way out, it would be most appreciated. And then I also wanted to ask, I forgot it when we talked about staff, the Staff Healthcare Committee. But we have Chris Bex has joined the committee as an alternate. We have one more alternate seat, if there is anyone interested in serving on SHCC. Something to look into. Okay, well, please let us know. Ashley just asked if they had to be a staff council member. I don't think that they do. So they do not. So if you know someone who might be interested, you know, is very interested in healthcare, and might want to serve as an alternate, please feel free to connect them to us. Other external committee reports or updates?
This is Tom for the parking committee. We got some clarification that we can more than just grant or deny appeals for parking violations. So more flexibility there if you find yourself getting a parking ticket that may still be at fault, but we may be able to release you of the liability of the fine while still finding you at fault for violating the policy, which grants much more discretion in cases that where you may have technically violated something, but there are a lot of extenuating circumstances. So if you do find yourself in one of those situations, let us know. It requires more coordination on the committee's part, but we can definitely do it.
Is there a question there?
I know that's something people tend to care a lot about.
By speaking right?
Oh, please, yeah.
As a member of the ASOAF PR committee, we should talk. Please.
Give me your email and we can definitely discuss.
So should we mark parking advisory as is it now active? Can we remove the inactive? Or do you know?
The committee is inactive but reviewing citations. So
okay.
We do not meet as a committee for anything other than processing these apps or
field.
Okay. So it's still continuing the way it's been.
Still continuing the way it's been. I know we talked briefly, and we can talk more offline on getting that back online.
Yeah.
If anyone else has any other.
So I wanted to talk about item E, the Food for Thought Committee. ASUAF sent us an email and asked for a staff council rep on Food for Thought. I did look back at staff council meetings before 2011 or so, and at some point in time we were an active part of that committee. And so they're asking for a new rep from us. The committee information has been attached. Fritz mentioned that mentioned some information about the committee, and there's more in the committee information. Do you have anything more to add for that?
Again, we're encouraging, everyone to participate who can. I think they're going to meet only like once or twice a semester. Super low maintenance committee for a really awesome cause. If any of you like eat on campus at all, if you're upset with the prices of coffee, anything like that, pizza, join the committee, talk it out. We're really looking for a lot of support for this.
Did you have NANA representatives that meet with you?
Yeah, we do have.
I think either Glenn Teets or one of the representatives from Dining Services will be on the committee itself. Just to listen to students and staff comments.
Is it Glenn or Pam? I'm not sure if that person comes directly from NANA, but they are employed through the chain of food and dining.
Okay, so they're UAF employees that are managing the NANA contract.
Yeah.
And do we know if the contract is... Does the contract already come up and been renewed, or was it coming up sometime soon? Does anyone know?
I think that question would be directed towards Glenn Teets or Raj Kirpati.
Yeah, if there would be someone interested in joining this committee, and it sounds like meeting once or twice a semester, so fairly low. Anyone? Bueller? All right. Again,
all right, Brad, as the department that runs the register, helps run the registers, I'd be happy to meet with the Food for Thought Committee.
Awesome. Thank you. And one thing I did forget to update or ask about or even ask the Chancellor about, Work-Life Balance Committee. In pre-staff, Mary Alice and I talked to the Chancellor about that committee. We've heard from Pat Pitney about it, and he suggested a make UAF a better place to work. You know, would that be something you might want to do? Mary Alice said, yes, absolutely. And I don't think we have more information from there, but I know we were looking for potentially interested people to be part of that committee. And if it's all right, Mary Alice, can I direct them to staff affairs and or to advocacy to get that rolling? Last call for external committees. Okay, calendar committee. Have anything other than the written report for today? Sorry.
I've been collecting an enormous amount of very nice photos from people this week, and it runs through Friday, so I'm collecting those until the end of the day on Friday. And then as a committee, we'll try to meet soon after that to go through the photos that we've received.
So has there been a really good response to the email then?
Yeah. We've got 10 or 11 folders with various photos within those folders. So I think that response was pretty good, and I received some more even yesterday.
Excellent.
How do we submit photos? What email do we send them to?
Either to the staff council email, which goes to Nicole, right? Or my personal, the GD Simpson at alaska.edu.
Okay, thanks.
Would you like staff, you know, staff counselor Nicole to send out a second reminder to all staff? Do you think, would that be something that would be of use to the committee? Or do you have enough photos right now that...
That's a good question. I don't mind at all. Yeah, we can send out another email, certainly.
Okay. All right, if there's no other business, then we can move on to roundtable discussion.